Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Friday, everybody. He's Adam Harahawk. I'm Sean Cantwell, and we've got a lot of stuff to get to today. Of course, Lions, this is the first Friday in what feels like forever that we actually are previewing an upcoming Lions game and not recapping the one that happened the night before.
It is weird having games on Thursdays.
Anyway, having two of them back-to-back
at
that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we're all used to the Thanksgiving Day thing because that's just kind of how this goes.
That's tradition.
But I'm not used to so much having it happen and then going back on the Thursday night thing a second week in a row. That's a little bit different for our...
I mean, it did work out. I mean, after the Thanksgiving game, they didn't. I mean, it was like a full week to play it another Thursday. And then got a couple extra days of rest before taking on a pretty good team in the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, so that's at least nice. Even seems like the injury reports are a little more encouraging, probably more so than they would have been if not for those extra couple days. So as of right now, this is what we know for sure. Josh Pascal, Taylor Decker, and Ali McNeil had full practice. Decker's now had multiple full practices. Pascal had his first full practice yesterday. So that's seemingly a good sign that we're going to be getting some major pieces of the defense back. Having Pascal again, it would seem, would put him on track to return here after missing last week's game. And that would be a huge boost to the edge rush. I mean, Za'Darius Smith has been good. Al-Qaeda Muhammad has been good. But you could certainly use more help there. Because you're getting pretty low on... you know, as far as these things go. So you've got that going for you now, which is nice. You've also got DJ Reader. He returned to practice yesterday, but still somewhat limited. Levi Onwuzurike, limited with a hamstring. And Trevor Nowoski, unfortunately, is now new to the injury report. But it's at that point, you're probably leaning more on Zeke Turner to take more snaps that if that happens. But it looks like you're going to be a lot healthier than you were the last couple weeks, that's for sure, and that is desperately needed right now.
Yeah, because a lot of walking wounded. It was almost like every week. Who was injured this time? So now it's good to see that we're getting some people back.
Right, that's somewhat of a relief for sure. And you're going to need all the help you can get because we know how good the Bills' passing game is. Like, they're among the best in the league, and they're pretty solid on the run too, so you need really all the help you can get when you look at it. Josh Allen has been absolutely fantastic this year as a passer. You'll remember there was a long time where it seemed like, is he ever gonna get over the turnovers? Like, he had 18 picks last season. To say the least, he's definitely cleaned up a lot of the sloppy play from before. He's only got 5 interceptions so far through this season. He's 9th in yards per attempt in the league. Or the Bills as a team are 9th in yards per attempt, 6th in passer rating. And Allen himself is 4th in Pro Football Focus grade and 1st in ESPN's QBR for whatever those things are worth. And this, by the way, on top of losing Stephon Diggs in the offseason, where you're now basically making, you're splitting a lot of your yards between Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman, Dalton Kincaid, and Amari Cooper, who you picked up at the deadline. And it hasn't seemed to hurt the offense really any, you know, having an all-pro up and leave and go to Houston. I would have assumed that they would have taken a step back this year with that, but was not the case. And their O-line is pretty good at protecting him too, which certainly helps. They're top 10 in pass blocking in the league, but to be fair, obviously the sack rate, they're first, like, they have the lowest sack rate in the league. But if we're to be honest here, that's helped a little bit by the fact that he is he's so mobile. He's able to escape when he sees the pocket start to collapse. He can get out of there. He can make plays with his legs. So I mean, that may not be telling the full story, really. But even despite all that, the pass defense for the Lions is about as good as any in the NFL, despite the fact that you've lost so many guys. But that said, prior to Thanksgiving, when seemingly everybody on this team got hurt, the Lions were keeping basically every team, you know, close to or under their average from a QB rating standpoint, and for the most part, keeping them close to or below average when it came to their passing yards, with the exceptions notably of Geno Smith and Matt Stafford. But you should have quite a few players back. Josh Pascal, it looks like, is going to play. DJ Reader looks likely to play. And Onyeka, it's really still kind of a coin flip, but trending towards he's likely going to play. Now, you're going to be short at linebacker because, obviously, Nowoski entered the injury protocol this week, concussion protocol. But Alex Anzalone is still out for a few more weeks, so you're going to see probably more of Quan Alexander, Ezekiel Turner, Jack Campbell, the newly signed Jamal Adams, who is playing it who's playing linebacker now for some reason. That's a thing. But they are really, they've been very good at stopping the pass at any rate. And obviously they've got injured and they haven't been rushing the pass as much, but Aaron Glenn has dialed up the blitzes and it seems to be working. Like, we were kind of worried that, I mean, he's going to have to blitz more often, and they're fourth in the league at it currently, but it seems to be working for him. Meanwhile, you're obviously we know what Josh Allen can do running the ball. The crazy thing is, they've only rushed for 150 yards or more twice this season, but there's only three times they haven't rushed for at least 100 yards. The Lions, though, they've gotten better, it seems like, at stopping the run as the season has gone on. You had a really rough spot the couple weeks against the Vikings and the Titans. The Titans, which was still ultimately a blowout game. But the numbers have come down significantly. You haven't allowed a team to get more than 100 rushing yards on you in the last five games. So that's got to be, you know, good for something here. And that's, again, with all the injuries and things that they've had, that's pretty impressive. And if Ali McNeil's able to go on Sunday, if he clears concussion protocol, that's going to be pretty massive in its own right. Like, this is where he thrives, and the Bills, the interior of the offensive line, not great. He should have a fine time getting some tackles for loss. He's actually leading the team, or tied for the team lead in tackles for loss this season. If they're at relatively full health, the Lions might even have an advantage here. The question is, how full of health are they going to be at, ultimately? Meanwhile, as far as their defense goes, I'm less worried, to say the least of it. The Bills are okay at stopping the pass. They're pretty solid there. They've only got a pass rating over 100, allowed a pass rating over 100 three times this season. But when you look at the teams they've played, I mean, it's not really like they've played particularly great teams where that's been the problem. I mean, the Ravens, that's about it. Not like the Jets and the Titans and the Colts certainly have particularly great passing offenses anyway, and you still allowed 200 passing yards to the Titans anyway, which is well above their season average by a decent margin. And you allowed more passing yards to the Jets the week you played them than possibly anybody has all season. Like, they're averaging somewhere like 210 yards a game, and you gave up 272 to them. I feel like this is a matchup that the Lions could potentially go and exploit. But then you held KC to 181 yards. But like we said, the Chiefs' offense this season is not the offense of old. It's been the defense that's been keeping them in games. And you just got gashed pretty bad by Matt Stafford last week to the tune of 320 yards. I like Jared Goff's odds there a lot. But I also really like the matchup for the run game here. The running game, admittedly, last week wasn't as good as it has been. Like, the Bears game, Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs, did about everything you could have asked of him. Ultimately, minus a fumble from Gibbs in a really key spot. But last week, a little softer on the run game. You're only averaging like 3.3 yards a carry, 111 yards against the Packers. But it's still pretty good, all things considered. And it's still more rushing yards on average than the Packers have been giving up this season. So, I mean, even then, it's still not bad. Meanwhile, Buffalo can't stop the run all that well. Like, they're ranked 8th, their run defense. But when you look at it, when you kind of take a look at those numbers a little bit more closely, only 4 times this season has Buffalo managed to keep the yards per carry for each team under that team's season average. And that was against the Texans, the Titans, the Seahawks, and last week with the Rams. But again, last week, Rams didn't really need it. The Rams were passing the ball with impunity. But by and large, they're giving up right around, and I believe they've exceeded their opponent's season average in yards per carry thus far all but 4 times this season. So that would seem to bode well for you here. And even last week against the Rams, it was only 3.3 yards a carry, but you gave 137 yards, which was still far more than the Rams' running game usually does. So I would expect that you're going to have times where you can, if your O-line's up to par here, and even more so if you have a healthy Taylor Decker again, where you're going to see Buffalo give up some big plays on the running game. I like my odds here a lot. I'm not like some of the pundits out there talking crazy things like double digit victories for the Lions. That's not how this is going to go. Blowout games don't happen that often in the National Football League and are certainly not easy to predict, if we've learned anything from this season. While I definitely think you're always good to pick the Lions against the spread, by and large, they've been better against the spread than seemingly any team in the NFL this season. Like they're doing quite well in that department. I don't expect it's going to be like a blowout by any means. You're going to have some work to do, but I don't think it's a stretch to say that a win here is a very much a reasonable expectation. And if you win this game, who are you losing to the rest of the way, dude? Honestly, like, I don't see any other game on that schedule that's going to be, if you can beat Buffalo, quite frankly, you can beat anybody. And at that point, I feel like you're going to be unstoppable come playoff time. I mean, from here, you've got Chicago, San Fran, that's basically quit. And I may get into that a little bit here later. And the Vikings. Like, this is the big test here. If you can hang with a team that, yes, I know, KC's got, they're 12-1. But Buffalo is the team that I find myself really worried about if we have to match up against them in a Super Bowl. I think, honestly, if you can beat them, that's a pretty good sign that you can take on pretty much anybody, once you get to that portion of the playoffs, shall we say.
I would hope so. Stop saying Super Bowl. You're jinxing us.
Nope. Can't do it. Can't help it. I'm going to speak this into existence, Adam. You're just going to have to accept that.
You can't jinx us on Friday the 13th. Get a calendar.
I don't care. You can take your superstition and shove it, dude. It's happening. It's going to happen. I will will this into existence via this radio show one way or the other. It's going to happen. A lot of stuff to do today. Don't go anywhere. It is happy hour. Stick around. We'll be right back. So, things are really not going good for the San Francisco 49ers. Of course, they played last night on Thursday Night Football, and they were just getting rather banged up. Like, a lot of injuries, a lot of key guys missing over there, and they would ultimately go on to lose a 12-6 game to the Rams. But the biggest thing that came from that night was apparently they were down. They were already down Dre Greenlaw and Dee Winters, both dealing with injuries. So Kyle Shanahan goes to try and call in Devondre Campbell to enter the game, and he said no. I didn't know you could do that. I learned something new today, I guess.
Everybody else in the league is like, can we do check the rule book.
And then apparently in the fourth quarter, Campbell walked to the locker room with a towel over his head without having played a snap. Head coach Kyle Shanahan explained after the game that Campbell elected not to enter the game, even though Greenlaw and Winters were dealing with injuries. Quote, he said he didn't want to play today.
Someone tells me he's probably not up for contract negotiations this year.
No, he's a free agent at the end of the season.
Is he really? Oh, my God.
Yep. He done messed up. Campbell's decision and subsequent stroll to the locker room left Shanahan, teammates, and coaches fuming after the loss. Shanahan said the plan was for Campbell to enter the game after Greenlaw departed because he was dealing with knee soreness. It's also Greenlaw's first game back from an Achilles injury he sustained in the Super Bowl. After Campbell said no, the Niners put in Demetrius Flanagan Fowles, the team's only healthy linebacker left on the roster. You have nobody healthy on your roster. And guys just like, nope, not really feeling it today.
Yep, no loyalty.
I mean, we gave a lot of hard time to Anthony Richardson for not going in or for coming out of the game for a play a couple weeks ago because he was tired or whatever. This dude didn't even play a snap in the game. It's like, nah, I just don't feel like it today. Like, yeah. You got to imagine he's getting cut soon, and all indications were actually one of his teammates actually after the game said, yeah, he's probably getting cut here real soon. There's some things that, you know, guys just will not tolerate, and this is, that's one of them.
I mean, is he that good of a player to where a potential team would take a flyer on him?
Probably not at this point. I don't think he's...
That's not somebody you want in your locker room.
Yeah. I think his career, if anything, might have just ended. So he was signed as an unrestricted free agent from the Packers in March with the idea that he'd be basically the placeholder at weak side linebacker until Greenlaw returned. That signing came after Eric Kendricks agreed to a deal with the Niners and backed out at the last minute. So he started 12 of the first 13 games for this team. The only exception being because the Niners started five down linemen and only one linebacker before he entered. For what that might be worth. So he didn't play. He started every game of the season, I think, until this last one.
Wow.
And then just decided, nope, not doing it.
Just don't feel like it.
Like, he went from playing like 90% of the defensive snaps on this team to like none. And so apparently he just decided that he didn't want to play. Apparently, particularly, there's one player that just went all the way off about this, Charvarius Ward, who is the guy who said, yeah, he's probably getting cut soon. He was not happy because he went to the game only a few weeks after his one-year-old daughter died. He's a professional. He's been playing for a long time. If he didn't want to play, he shouldn't have dressed out. He could have told him that before the game. I feel like that was some suck-up bleep that he did.
Yep.
It definitely hurt the team. D went down, and we needed a linebacker. So for him to do that, that's some suck-up stuff to me, in my opinion. He's probably going to get cut soon, so it is what it is with that.
Yep.
And sure enough, Kyle Shanahan said today they're exploring their options as far as cutting him from the team. Hard to blame him. I mean, you can't do that sort of stuff and expect to still have a job in this league.
His agent's probably in his ear, what are you doing?
Like, are you making it so it's like impossible for me to ever make another dime off you again? Like, you know you're never getting another job in the NFL after this, right? You have to know that. You can't not be aware of that.
Yeah, this happens. Was it two seasons ago? Antonio Brown just leaves right in the middle of a game. Made a real spectacle of himself.
Oh yeah, like that's that fun little bit of CTE, man. Like that, it does things to people. Wow. That's at least the excuse we can point to in AB's case. I don't necessarily think that is quite the case here. I mean, not that we know of anyway, but still, man, like it's not very often. Like it was a couple years ago, wasn't Vontae Davis who like just quit like at halftime of a game? Like, yep, I'm retiring now.
You just don't hear that in any sports. I mean, the only thing I can think of that is even close to it is when we had Juan Gonzalez.
And he just quit on the team from the jump.
Yeah, he just, can't play.
Yep, I like he made it pretty clear when he came here that this was like the last place on earth he wanted to be.
Yeah.
And well, like he didn't hit terribly for us, but he also, it was a down year for him, which would be a great year now for anybody on this team.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's how rare of a thing that is. I feel like that we can point to like all these examples of where it's happened because it is such a rare thing. Like when something like this happens, you remember it. Like I said, the Vontae Davis thing about 6 years ago with Buffalo. Like there's just some times when you see something like this happen and it just absolutely just stuns everybody because, like, you played all season and then just decided because you didn't get to play last week that, now I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm stunned in that I'd never actually recognized that that was an option that you could just do that, but I guess if you can do that, but you're not going to get or you're not going to have a career for very long.
San Fran has got to do something quick. And
they're 6-8 now. I think they've basically shot their playoff chances away.
Well, my point is they need to do something about this player now.
Oh,
otherwise, it's going to happen all throughout the league.
I honestly don't think so, dude. Guys have too much pride in this league, by and large, to let that sort of thing happen. I don't think we'll be seeing much of it because half his team wanted to kill him after that game as it was. We got to hit a break. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. I know Adam's really excited to do this, especially after the way things went last night. But unfortunately for you, we still kind of got to do it anyway because we do like sports-like things on this show. As they say in hockey, let's do that hockey.
So the Wings took on the Flyers last night, and
that was a disaster.
Yeah, Scott Laudon, did he have a night or what? 4 goals on the night. He got all the goals for Philly. Scoreless in the first. I was like, is this the game we're going to get? But the Wings, they came out with a little bit of fire. They carried some of that fire that they had against, who they beat in the shootout? Buffalo. So I'm thinking, okay, we've got ourselves a game. And it just disintegrated. I mean, aside from the fact that you let Scott Laudon hang 4 on you.
He is now tied for second on the team in goals with Mishkov, for what it's worth.
Mishkov, yeah, I got a chance to check him out for the first time. And Philly's got somebody there, absolutely. Can't speak a lick of English. Remind you of somebody? Well, maybe a young Pavel Datsyuk?
Not perhaps.
But, I mean, the Wings just couldn't pull it together. They were 37% in the faceoff circle. Only mustered 26 shots the entire game. One thing that I can say about both the Flyers and Wings is they were very disciplined. Only 2 penalty minutes aside through the whole game. So there was that. And the Wings did out-hit Philly 16-12, but... Yeah, I mean, you did, and you got 1 goal in the second period, making it 2-1 from Ben Sherratt, his first of the season. Andrew Kopp and JT Compher with assists. But, I mean, they started off with some fire.
And then showed none again until, like, the last couple minutes of the game.
You make an argument that you couldn't, they didn't then either. Newsy pulled the goalie numerous times and got scored on twice in that time. I mean, it was one of those games where it was tight, but then, you know, you pull the goalie, which, quite frankly, I've been watching hockey for a few weeks now. I tell you, really, really getting into it. I've only seen pulling the goalie work like 2 or 3 times. I mean, I know as a coach, it shows that you're trying, but...
And granted, most of those times, I think, were John Cooper in Tampa.
Yeah. Yeah, some coaches, some teams could pull it off. This team can't. Leave the goalie in.
Well, to be fair, this team can't operate at full strength or with an extra man, so it doesn't matter.
I mean, yeah, exactly. They can't play defense, so you pull the goalie and put a sixth person out there who can't play defense. You know, you never seen, Flyers so excited to see the goalie pulled.
Hard to blame them.
It's free reign, boys. You get a goal. You get it. Actually, it was just Scott Laudon.
Laudon gets another goal.
Yeah. I think he's still scoring.
I bet he is. But, yeah, it's really just hard to sit here and watch a team that there is seemingly no urgency, no accountability from anybody. They just, it seems like no one's really trying. Like, the fundamentals just aren't there.
That's it, right there.
Like, there's no one to be held for account for anything up to and including the coaching staff. And it really doesn't speak to a particularly good culture, shall we say, that is being established here in Hockey Town. And I, at this point, you feel like just complacency from everybody from the top on down.
Yzerman needs to come down from that GM booth and get himself in the locker room. And maybe he needs to kick some trash cans. Maybe he needs to call Lalonde out on the carpet. I mean, there's no maybe about it. He should be, if he isn't already. There, I can't imagine Steve Yzerman being the fierce competitor that he's been his entire career, saying back, okay, yeah, this is fine. No, we'll turn things around. He cannot be happy with this. He just can't.
There's no way. The problem is, and here I feel like it's even more the case that there is no pressure, because it doesn't matter what will happen. Yzerman will never lose his job here.
No.
Like, it's not going to happen unless they literally become the worst team in the NHL for, like, multiple seasons in a row. Like, yeah, that, it would take a lot for him to not have that job. So he's not feeling any pressure either. And, look, he's still drafting good, but none of his acquisitions have seemingly worked out particularly well.
No.
Like, you gave away Jake Walman, who, by the way, had a multi-goal or multi-point game last night against San Jose. For San Jose, rather, against the Blues. Did you know that he's, like, leading their team right now in
points?
He's actually, okay, he's not leading. He's top three in points.
Wow.
5 goals, 17 assists, good for 22 points, good for third on the team behind William Eklund and Granlund. So he's been putting up more points than anybody on, quite possibly anybody on this team has.
Somebody in the Red Wings organization has got to have some loose lips. And I want to know what happened between that marriage between the Wings and Walman.
Did you literally, give another team a draft pick to take him?
Yeah.
And get literal nothing back?
Yes.
You'll never be able to explain that to me. You don't think we could use those 22 points on this team? He'd be good for, like, fourth on the team in scoring.
Well, look who they let walk.
He'd be good. Hell, I think he'd be good for, like, fifth on the team in goals right now.
Yep. You let Walman skate. You let Sprong out of there. You couldn't keep...
But we brought back Patrick Kane, who looks like a corpse this season.
Yeah, he has not looked good. He did look good last season, so that decision I could get behind. It hasn't panned out.
At all.
No, not really. But at the time, it made sense. I mean,
I'll give you that. But Tarasenko signing has not worked out either.
No.
And possibly even worse, if anything.
He was supposed to replace the David Perron hole.
And that very much did not happen.
No, it has not. So, and then the team, the players that you have, your Larkins, your DeBrinkets, not named Lucas Raymond, has just been kind of like, just another day at the office. Let's get this going and grab some pizza after the game.
I mean, Raymond, Larkin, and DeBrinket after the game. They've been about as good as anyone. Like, Raymond, DeBrinket, and Larkin all have about 11 or 12 goals, and DeBrinket and Larkin have 11 assists each, and Raymond's got like 19. So, I mean, they're doing what they need to be doing. DeBrinket's doing what you brought him in to do. So is Raymond, so is Larkin. Sider is really, too, to a great extent. It's just literally everybody after that.
Yeah. Comfer, Kopp. I mean, even though Kopp did score a pair in Buffalo. But, I mean,
you're not getting enough from anybody, and your defense, like, you're literally nobody beyond Sider and, Evanson, you'll excuse it because he's a rookie.
Right.
But, like, literally anybody beyond those two guys. Walman would probably be a top defensive pairing guy right now.
Yes.
On this team.
Yes, he would.
You've downgraded in every other way. Like, there's no reason we should ever see Jeff Petrie on the ice again.
No.
Justin Hall, there's clearly no reason for him to even be here. Ben Chiarot, you could kick him to the curb. I wouldn't be mad at it. He of the minus 11 this season.
Yep. So, I mean, as far as free agents go, I mean, they're building themselves through the draft. So, because, I mean, you've got Nate Danielson doing really well where he's at. You've got Carter Mazur, doing well. You're going to start seeing these kids. They are building through the draft. So that part of the Iser plan is working. But the free agents, that stopgap, it's not happening. Take the help wanted sign out of the window. Nobody's coming. This is not a destination for your big free agents. That's why we weren't going to get a Stamkos. Probably couldn't pay him the money.
Apparently, we were getting, well, allegedly, if the rumors and the reports we've heard are true, we could have got us a Stamkos. But to be fair, how's that working out for Nashville right
well,
now?
Well, yeah, point taken. But at the moment, they knew that they were going to need to sign Seider and Raymond. They knew that was going around the curve. So,
but it sounds like Stevie was told upstairs, like, he had a deal in place. Stammer wanted, a fourth year, and they were not giving it to him.
See, that's such nickel and dime. Of course, I'm saying nickel and dime. It's not my paycheck, not my checkbook, but...
Yeah, but I don't care whose paycheck it is. Like, that's someone who makes a good magnitude of more of money than any of us do and has their building subsidized by the city of Detroit. You know what? Quite frankly, I don't care. Your earnings are in the literal billions. I don't care.
Yeah. That is going to anger me if that is really the factor, that fourth year, that was a big deciding factor. Because here you were coaxing a guy. Yes, of course, it hasn't panned out in Nashville. But at the time, you were getting a guy who was leaving the perennial favorites with the Tampa Bay Lightning in a nice market, Florida. Who doesn't want to spend the winters in Florida? You want him to come to Detroit for a team that hasn't made the playoffs. And I'm sorry, love Michigan. But Michigan in the winter, as opposed to
Tampa in the winter, yeah.
So I mean, yeah, and you're going to use that fourth year as a sticking point.
And he allegedly was willing to do it, and then Nashville gave him the fourth year, so there he is.
Yeah, there he goes. I mean, they probably wouldn't even let him wear number 91. I don't know.
Well, they apparently did.
Yeah,
I mean, Detroit might have.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
That's kind of hard to say. You don't come to think of it.
Yeah.
Would they have?
Maybe he's superstitious. Hockey players are.
I don't know. If that really is the case, though, and that's all the reports I've heard are that Stamkos wanted a fourth year and the Wings were not willing to, or Steve went upstairs and nope, can't do it.
No. That's...
Like, at some point, and again, in this case thus far, hasn't exactly worked. Like, he's on pace to get... to not even crack 20 goals this season,
yeah.
Which whoever thought we'd see that Steve Stamkos,
different environment,
healthy season,
different environment. It's not like the Nashville Predators are trash on paper. They look very good. They got goaltending. Roman Josi still doing things.
Josi Saros is leading the league in wins or in games played, but he's also leading the team in losses and shots faced.
They're not having a good year. But I mean,
the defense has really just let that man down, like,
yeah,
greatly, because he's still got a goals against a 272, mind you, but nobody has faced more shots in this league than he has.
Back to the Wings for a second. It has been announced that oh my God, I can't. Cam Talbot, he did suffer an injury in the last game, and he is out
again
for Saturday. So does Sebastian Kosa get another call up?
Well, I mean, what else are you gonna do? I mean, at this point, you have to.
Yeah.
And I think, really, it might be the only thing that can get this team, that can shake things up, that they're actually willing to do.
That team had a different look when Kosa was between the pipes. They just did.
They did, absolutely. So Husso is getting the start tomorrow, then. And they're going to call someone up from GR. I would imagine it would be Husso.
I would think so.
I mean, or Kosa, rather. Like, Kosa. It has to be. It absolutely has to be. Like, at this point, I don't think it'll be the worst thing if he gets to start here somewhere.
I would like to see that very much.
I mean, I know we're all worried about starting the... At least front office is worried about starting the clock on his service time.
You still have 8 more games. I mean, you can still play him for 8 more games before that first year ticks off.
Yeah. Like, I would just like to see some sort of shakeup made here. Like, they're not going to fire Lalonde, clearly.
No.
They're not going to cut any of these god-awful defensemen we have.
Nope.
This would be at least something that might wake somebody up in this organization.
Yeah, you need something. bring in a free agent, but we talked about that. Chances of that are slim to none. This is about the only thing you can do to really shake up this squad.
Right. Because there's not much. I mean, you kind of got hamstrung here by some of the questionable decisions made in the offseason. Like, this whole thing's supposed to be a youth movement and everything else, and we're now one of the oldest teams in the league.
Yep.
Between the Kopp signing, Compher, and Kane, and Tarasenko, really? Like, you now have, you're very close to being one of the oldest teams in the NHL. I know that's kind of shocking. I couldn't believe it when I saw that.
Wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, for a team that has prided itself so much on this youth movement, you're actually the eighth oldest team by average player age, as of at least of opening night, in the NHL. Average age of 29. The oldest being Edmonton Oilers by about a year.
Ah.
So that puts you in the top, like, quarter by age of all NHL teams. And this is supposed to be a big youth movement thing, and yet here we are making the same, well, some of the same mistakes Ken Holland did, offering all this money and wasting a bunch of cap on old, over-the-hill guys. Not saying that there's not a place for some of these dudes, but, I mean... We talked about the Kane signing and what that is. Jeff Petrie's basically dead. Ben Sherratt's 33. Like, Cam Talbot's 37.
Yeah.
Like, you see, like, the how much they're putting into these old and increasingly broken down guys and guys who just are not getting it done anymore.
Now, I will say, in Cam Talbot's defense, when he is healthy, he has done what you've asked him to do.
He has, absolutely. He's certainly the exception to that. He's the best goalie probably on your of the three guys that you started the season with. Yep. But as far as your older defensive vets, they're all terrible. Most of your aging forwards have not been good either. Like, at this point, either you got to embrace the youth movement entirely here, or I don't know what to do.
Right.
Like, it just, the messaging isn't exactly consistent here by any means. Yeah, we're getting younger. It's really all about the kids. And when these guys come up, and it's going to be great. And then here, Patrick Kane, you know, who's like playing on one leg at this point. Like, yeah. Here's a bunch of money to stick around for a couple more years.
All right, let me limp over there to sign it.
I don't understand it. It just boggles my mind, man.
Yeah, it is frustrating.
I'm trying to be patient with it. No one's ever going to accuse me of, you know, being a Steve bot by any means. But I'm trying to be patient with this. But you're making it nigh upon impossible for me to do so. It's getting a bit much. It's wearing a bit thin on me, at least. Anyway, we got to hit a quick break. Actually, we got to get a check of your weather. Currently, in downtown Sandusky, you are at 15 degrees under clear skies. John McMurray has the details of your forecast next on 95.3 WMIC. It's about the time of the week where we, well, take a little bit of a break from being depressed about the Red Wings and going full on, you know, super fans about the Lions. They're going to win by 25 points this week, I'm telling you right now.
Against Buffalo? I don't know.
to try and help people a little bit, change some lives, maybe even for the better.
Air quotes.
It's once again time for our favorite bit of the week, Sean and Adam's unsolicited advice. Where real people with real problems send real questions to real advice columnists. Unfortunately for them, we get our hands on them, we intercept, and quite frankly, I think we do a better job of this than the people who get paid to do this crap for a living.
Well, disclaimer, I've been having a very annoying afternoon, so I might feel the need to just want to watch the world burn.
Yeah, we may ruin some lives along the way, but you know, sometimes you just want to watch the world burn, yes. I guess, in Adam's case.
Yep.
So let's dive right in, shall we?
We shall.
Dear somebody who cares, I am one of many lonely adults struggling to make close friends. It's never come easy for me, and it's compounded by the fact that I'm an introvert who works from home part-time with three small children living far away from family. My husband is a great friend and support, but I'd love to have more female friends. Several years ago, when we moved to our current, very social area, I started inviting people to barbecues, large parties, out to dinner, and on vacations. I work hard to listen when people talk and remember what they share, texting them on birthdays or big days they mention were coming. I offer to watch children and plan play dates. While I feel friendly with a large circle of people, I am rarely, if ever, on anyone's invite list and don't get any texts on my birthdays. I don't think my social skills are appalling. People do seem to like me. I don't resent my acquaintances spending time together without me. I just wonder what I'm missing. Am I expecting too much from friendships as an adult? Should I be happy and not lonely with what I have? I know I'm lucky to know so many of my neighbors, but when I stop trying to interact with them, they forget about me. I'm frankly exhausted with the one-sided effort and ready to give up.
Wow, that sucks. I mean, first of all, there's so many people that self-diagnose themselves as an introvert. The writer claims that she's an introvert, but yet she plans parties and barbecues and constantly having people over at her house. But then she doesn't get an invite in kind. And that sucks.
Other than the part about not getting invited to things in turn, I feel like we know someone like this who claims to be an introvert and then also throws the biggest, best parties of anyone in our friend group, possibly a certain LaPierre Main Street manager.
He says he doesn't.
He claims he's an introvert.
Oh, yeah, right.
I don't believe it, but
I thought you were saying he doesn't. He claims he doesn't get invited to other things.
No, that with the exception of that part, that sounds a lot like our good friend Jimothy down the hall. Yeah.
And at the risk of alienating our listeners by also saying, we also know of somebody it reminds me of where, I do this for everybody else and then nobody invites me out to anything. It's like, well, so maybe the writer is like the person that I'm referring to. Maybe they're a jerk.
Yeah, maybe you're just a terrible human being. If you're talking about the person I think you're talking about, then yeah, you're a terrible person.
Well, I mean, we've seen that. I've seen that in numerous people where, they do plan things. They do invite people. They do text people and everything else. But when you get them in a social setting, they're just a jerk. They're judgmental. They're argumentative.
They like to pick fights with people just to watch the world burn.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that's not somebody you want to be with. I mean, this writer would have to really take a long, hard look in the mirror and find out why you're not being invited. And if that's the case, I mean, if you truly don't think there's any reason, go to these people and say, hey, listen, I heard you had a barbecue. I had you at mine, and I didn't hear anything about that. I mean, is everything okay? I mean, am I just a real jerk? I mean, lay it on the line for me. Sometimes, I mean, and if those people are like, oh, we forgot all about you, well, then you know not to invite them to anything of yours.
I mean, yeah, there's certainly that.
Or just show up.
Just show up anyway. Hey, we didn't want you here. Like, what are you doing? Go away.
Yeah. Or, find out who didn't invite you to their party. And next time it's barbecue season or whatever party, just invite that person's husband. That's it. just send the invitation to just the husband, not her, the husband.
Are you trying to be the most hated person in your neighborhood? Because that's what you're going to accomplish.
Well, if it's on fire, might as well throw some gasoline on it.
That seems like a terrible idea.
Why am I not invited by my husband? Oh, maybe it's because I'm a garbage human being and didn't invite her. Oh, man, I've learned the errors of my ways. I'm going to walk into traffic.
I don't think they'll learn the errors of their ways. They definitely probably aren't walking into traffic. I feel like all that's going to happen there is that you're just going to end up, like, they're going to resent you, and, like, you're not gonna be invited to anything by the rest of the neighborhood. They're going to start gossiping about you. They're all going to laugh at you. Like, they're all going to make fun of you.
Yeah. No kids coming to our house for trick-or-treating. This is crazy. I don't know what's going on here. They don't invite me out to this, and they don't do that, and they throw eggs at my house. I mean, something's up.
Right?
They toilet paper my house. It doesn't even have to be Devil's Night. They toilet paper my house every Friday. Something's amiss.
Yeah, there is that.
I think there's something. I think there's a lot of things that the writer's not telling us.
I don't know necessarily that this person's just a total awful human being necessarily. I mean, we've known people like that who absolutely that is their MO, but I don't know. Maybe it's because I just don't have healthy friendships with people either. But Lord knows the only people I hang out with are people we work with here in this operation. And that's...
Oh, you say that, but everywhere we go, you're like, hey, there, what's going on? Hey, everybody's like, you talked to Sean lately, and
Yeah, but how many other parties am I getting invited to, realistically?
Your dance card's pretty full every weekend when you're not playing.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I don't know. I guess, I mean, maybe do less of the party host thing, because, like, the downside of the party host thing is, like, okay, yeah, because you're tied up, you're hosting the party, like, no one's really having the big in-depth, you know, talking, you know, in depth with you, like, because you're just running around and being the, you know, you're focusing more on making sure the party's going well instead of really getting to develop connections with people, you know, beyond that. Yeah. Like, maybe this is where you try more, like, you know, smaller scale, deeper in person. Like, we're inviting, like, you know, maybe a handful of people over for a game night or out to a dinner or something, you know, to try and develop more of a personal connection with people as opposed to just being, you know, only known as Life of the Party guy. I don't know.
I think I have to stick with my
response of I'm already assuming you're a horrible human being.
Yeah, you're absolute trash, and you need to talk to your neighbors and your friends and find out why you're trash.
I feel like that just feels overly confrontational and is not going to result in, you're not going to be happy with their answer, and or you're not going to believe their answer if they are honest with you. Like, right. I feel like it's not going to get you the result you're looking for, man.
Or people are like, oh, well, yeah, didn't even think about it. And then you get invited to the next one.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Like, I just, there's a way to handle that with some semblance of tact that I'm not detecting at all from you right now. You're just like, hey, I saw you guys had a party, didn't invite me. What the hell? Are we not, what? Am I not good enough to show up to your get-togethers now? Is that how it's going to be? Like, I feel like you just coming in there with the most petty passive aggressiveness that you possess here.
I'm not saying write it on a cinder block and send it through their front window, but you know, maybe, you know, if you're texting, say, hey, you know, did you get that recipe I sent you? Oh, by the way, I saw that you had a party. That's did you have a good time? That sounded like fun. And then, you know, then sandwich it with, well, anyway, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, blah, blah, blah.
Again, this is the passive aggressiveness that Adam just coming out in full force right now.
Hope you had fun at your party.
Because that's how that's going to read, dude. Yeah, like, you know exactly what you're doing. And going to think in kind of, well, fine. He says, last time you come to one of your parties, like, that's when they just start declining your invites. Like, I guess if that's what you're going for, then sure, that's great advice, Adam. But
I don't know. Oh. Next time you have a barbecue, have it at their place. Send them an invite. Oh, she's having a barbecue. It's our place. Wow, that's our address. Okay,
right. I'll bring whiskey. I'll bring the food. I'll even do the cooking. But let's do this at someone's. That's not my house for a change.
Right.
Oh, let's do one more of these real quick, shall we?
Sure.
Dear, oh God, not them, anybody but them. My son is in a relationship with a young woman who had 3 children prior to meeting. They've had 2 additional children 11 months apart. His girlfriend, Jordan, grew up in foster care. She went through some rough stuff. When she became pregnant with my son's first child, I vowed I'd treat her children like they were part of my family. My other children also agreed that would be the only way to move forward. It wasn't long, however, that Jordan said things to me like threatening to keep the kids from me. Additionally, both she and the kids are very motivated by material items. They'll pretty much value visits based on what they receive from it. Because she grew up in foster care, I understand she places value on things and receiving gifts, but I'm single, trying to save for retirement, and trying to get by in a challenging economy. Because that relationship has become very strained, and because Jordan exhibits a lot of negative behaviors, my other kids don't want to be around her or her kids. I feel really uncomfortable with things that she's said to me. I don't know how to get past it. This unfortunately means I don't see a lot of my son or his children. I'm afraid to do anything special for them or buy them toys or books because their mom and the other kids would resent it. My son recently complained that he feels isolated from us. I told him we love him very much, but we don't know how to navigate that relationship. How can I manage to make my own son feel less isolated and balance my time and well-being?
She's doing everything she can. I mean, she is not obligated to deal. What's the wife's name? They said it a couple
Jordan,
times.
Jordan,
yeah. Sounds like Jordan's had a rough life, and maybe she's feeling resentment for the fact that her man's mom is still in the picture and wants to be part of their lives. she probably doesn't know how to deal with it, or like I said, maybe she's resentful. This, I mean, it doesn't sound like the writer needs to do anything more. Sounds like she's put up boundaries, she's sticking with those boundaries, and that's just the way it is. Where the everything lies is in the lap of the son. The son has to step up and wrangle his wife and make nice with his mom. I mean, listen, that's her grandkids. He wants to have, I'm sure he should want to have his kids know his mother,
certainly
their grandparents. So he needs to step up, be a man, and nip this in the bud. Pull Jordan aside. It's like, listen, this is what's going on. My mom doesn't owe your kids anything. Where are your kids' grandparents? Oh, where's your sorry, whoops, I forgot. Just really throw the fact that she doesn't have any parents.
I mean, I guess if your goal is to have your son go no contact with you, then that's a great idea.
No. He needs to go to his wife or girlfriend or whatever and say, listen, we can't have this. My mom is not going to be sitting there and giving you materialistic things to buy your kids
buy
love.
Your love,
yeah,
basically.
And, you know, because... You know, next thing you know, if she fell in, she brought down those boundaries and was succumbing to all their demands. You know, her other kids and their families are going to be resentful, and she's going to have a whole nother problem. She's put up the boundaries. She's sticking with them. She's not being heartless in any way she performs. It sounds like she's a fantastic woman. It's the son. The son has to step up and wrangle his wife. Or strangle his wife. No.
I do actually feel like, on this one, Adam might be right. Like, you have to. Cause
I'm always right.
Because you're going to. No, I. Literally every other installment of this show would dispute that. But you kind of. Short of, you know, reaching out to her and figuring out, you know, where her issues are coming from. Like, obviously, there's a lot of childhood trauma there that needs to be unpacked with somebody, but. Your best option probably is really going to your son like, hey, like, I want to spend time with the grandkids and you. And honestly, even her kids, but I feel a little bit, you know, disrespected. I wanted to, I want this, you know, smooth this thing out in some capacity. But, you know, your boundaries are what they're going to be. And if you're going to be unpleasant and rude and whatnot, then... You know, we're going to have a problem.
Yeah, big problem.
But the conversation definitely has to be had with the son, I think, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. He should have already seen this. The writer shouldn't even have had to write a letter. He should have stepped up, saw there was a problem, but he's siding with his wife, which, I mean, you should, but you gotta figure out when your spouse is wrong and deal accordingly. Because, I mean, he's got to sit back and think, what is my mom doing wrong? And the answer, if he's a rational human being, is nothing. She has done nothing wrong.
Yeah, she hasn't really... Yeah, she doesn't deserve this, necessarily.
No.
So, yeah, tell your kid how you're feeling. And, I mean, don't come at it in a... Again, a confrontational manner, per se, but, like... Why is she like this? Like,
yeah.
You know, and figure out, you know, come at it from a place of like, I want to know what, like, obviously she's been through some stuff.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, I get that that's where she's at now. And it's kind of influenced the kids in a certain way too. But how do we move forward from this?
Right. Right. Exactly. So I think the key is the son. He's got a man up.
I think we got time to do one more of these.
Okay.
Dear God, I hope this doesn't get picked up by Sean and Adam.
Uh-oh.
I've been at a job I love and value for 8 years. Recently, two members of our small team were promoted to supervisors. I was one of the top three candidates, but not selected for one of the positions. The two who were selected are not as qualified or less experienced, have no college education, etc. In addition, I was doing the work of a supervisor while we were waiting for the hiring process to play out. This has killed my passion for what I do. There's a possibility of another promotion in the next 3 or 4 years, but I'm not sure I can make it that long. Being asked to teach the new supervisors how to do their job is soul-crushing. Should I look for another job or stick it out and hope for the best in 3 or 4 years? This may be the easiest one we've ever done, I think.
Yeah, I guess you'd have to, here we go again, confront the your bosses and find out why you weren't selected. Working in a way is like, how can I improve my work to where maybe next time I'm being selected? Have them call them out. Say, why didn't I get the job? I mean, do it professionally. Why didn't I get the job? Something tells me that those two were promoted because they worked cheaper.
I mean,
they didn't have the college education like the writer. I'm assuming the writer has. So the writer was probably going to command a higher salary than the other two. But ultimately, yeah, if you're not feeling appreciated, if you feel as if you've reached the top of how you're going to climb that company, it might be time to move on.
I'm thinking absolutely start looking for a new job immediately. At that point, I don't even feel the need to go with the bosses and do the whole confrontational whatever. Like, well, so why didn't I get the job thing? Like, you're not going to be happy with the answer they give you no matter what anyway. Like, the only answer that I think that you'd be happy with is, well, you know, second thought, maybe we should give you that job. And that's not going to happen here, so just start looking elsewhere.
Start having your friends call your place of business as, you know, and act like potential employers. Hi, I'm calling on behalf of Alice or whatever. Says she's worked for you for this long. And okay, well, yeah, okay, so she worked. Okay, well, it sounds like she'd be great in our position. And then hang up.
Yeah.
Right, no. In their face.
Probably not a great idea either. Nah,
put your 2 weeks notice in.
Leave it with, you know, a minimum of messiness, because at some point you may want that company as a reference at some point down the line, and it's probably not smart to burn your bridges while you're still standing on them.
I think you need to steal a lot of office equipment.
No!
I think you need to...
That's a terrible idea.
I think you need to quiet quit.
There's quiet quitting, and then there's what you're talking about, which is just outright self-sabotage.
I think you need to start cooking fish and Brussels sprouts in the break room.
The views and opinions of this show are not necessarily those of that guy. Welcome to How to Get Fired from Your Job with Adam Harahuck, apparently. We got to hit a break, though. We'll come back. We got picks up next, to stick around. And maybe Adam will show you some more fun ways to get separated from your current gig. Back after this. It's that time of the week again. It is Friday. It's almost the end of the show. And we've once again barely given ourselves enough time to do the picks.
Woo!
Thankfully, there's only like a handful of games that actually matter this week. And no college football to contend with. So that works just fine for me. Drew Duffy joining us on the line as always.
Hi, Drew.
Hey. It wouldn't be a day without my turn signal on. I'll turn it off because I know it's annoying over the phone.
Yeah, please, when you're driving a commercial truck, don't use your turn signal.
A public service announcement brought to you by Happy Hour. Yeah, just scrolling through the games this week, like a lot of just trash games. The Jets and the Jaguars, who even cares
about
that?
They're both 3-10. I kind of want to watch that dumpster fire, I'm not going to lie.
Right. Ooh, the Dolphins and Texans, I'm sure that'll be a great game. The Chiefs and the Browns. Yeah, no. So there's two games that matter this week, and that's quite frankly what we're going to focus on here. There's another, maybe one or two. But we'll start with the 4:25 slate on Sunday. The Pittsburgh Steelers headed to Philly to take on the Eagles. Eagles are 5.5-point favorites as the home team. We'll start with Adam Harahuck on the pick.
You know what? I'm going for it. I'm going for my upset special of the week, and I think this will be a lot of fun to watch Pittsburgh just whoop on the Philly Eagles. And I this is a rivalry where I think that could possibly happen. So, yeah, give me Steelers.
All right, Drew Duffy on the pick.
I hate to say it, but I'm going with Adam on this one. It's the Pennsylvania Showdown, and I believe the steel industry is coming back. And let's face it, based on the current situation of the country, the Eagles crying, give me the Steelers.
Okay, I guess I'll be the only one to go against here. Give me Philly at home all day. Sunday Night Football. The Green Bay Packers head to Seattle to take on the 8-5 Seahawks. Green Bay, 2.5-point road favorite. Drew Duffy on the pick.
Yeah, I mean, Green Bay's still licking their wounds from what we did to them. So I figured they're probably got a little bit of pent-up rage. Go ahead and give me the Packers.
Adam.
No way. I don't want to see Green Bay enjoy any kind of success ever. I don't want them to ever have any kind of happiness whatsoever. Give me Seattle.
I, too, don't want to see the Packers happy ever, and I don't think they will be. Give me the Seahawks as well. And then the game we all really care about, your Detroit Lions at home against the Buffalo Bills Sunday afternoon. We'll start with Adam Harahuck on the pick.
Lions, 32. Bills, 28. Jake Bates will kick a field goal at 55 yards or farther.
Drew.
I've been thinking about this, and my inner Al Sharpton is coming out.
Here we go.
Are going to need some pain pills because the Lions are going to send them home crying.
That's beautiful, Drew. Give me the Lions. Let's say a final score of 34-31.
Ooh.
It's going to be a bit of a shootout of a game. Buffalo's not exactly a slouch on offense by any means, but Lions are going to come out on the good side of this one. That's your picks. On that note, we got to do a little bit of housekeeping here in our weekly attempt to cleanse our souls. Happy Hour would like to apologize to Derek Malone, Swingers, Great White, Creed, Three Doors Down, Jim Alt, Jim Alt's Love Pad, Dorothy, Brady Kachunk, Brady Kachunk, and Bananarama. We're sorry!
What do we say about Bananarama?
Just go back and listen, dude. We got to go. Sessions is up next at Solid State Radio. See you Monday at 3!